You are listening to End of Life University Podcast, Real Talk About Life and Death. This is episode number 130. Welcome to End of Life University Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, hospice physician, author, and educator. In this podcast, I share thoughtful conversations with experts in various fields related to death and dying, and informative teaching sessions on preparing for the end of life by living fully today. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm excited to share with you one of those teaching sessions. This will be a solo episode where I don't interview another person, but I just share with you some of the insights and interesting information I've been learning lately. And today we'll be talking about how death awareness can change the world and why we need it now. And I'm going to be sharing with you some really interesting studies that have been done over the past several years. So interested to bring that your way. As you may have heard, if you've listened to this podcast previously, for 2018, my emphasis is on death education and death awareness. And so one of the things I've done is sponsor a reading group for the entire year called A Year of Reading Dangerously. And as a group, we're reading one book a month, and then having a discussion, a conference call discussion about the book at the end of each month. And so if you're interested in taking part in that, we have over 700 members now from all around the world. We're all reading books together, which is really cool when you think about it. The energy of all these people kind of coming together, reading the same book, and processing it, and thinking about it. This month, which is February, if you're listening live, we're reading Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Other Lessons from the Crematory by Caitlin Doty. And we'll be having a discussion about that on February 28th. And Caitlin Doty will be joining us for the discussion, which will be fantastic. I'm really excited for her to be there to be answering questions from all the readers in the group. So that reading group is one thing that I've sponsored for the year. The other thing I've done is to create some teaching guidelines for a death and dying class, which you can download for free at eoluniversity.com if you have any interest at all in teaching your own class on death and dying. And so you'll be hearing various interviews about death and dying classes, and I'll be doing some other sessions about that and talking about teaching classes. And so today's episode is related to that because I want to share with you some scientific studies that have been done about the benefits of death awareness. So it goes along hand in hand with this emphasis of mine on teaching death and dying classes. And so for everyone who downloads the teaching guidelines for classes, I'll be sending out an invitation to participate in a work group. I'm only going to have about 10 to 12 people, I believe, in the work group. I want to keep it small, especially in the beginning. And we will be working together throughout the month of March. We'll get together by telephone once a week, talk about each person's projects, what type of class they're trying to create, what information they hope to teach and include, and we'll be brainstorming together how to create a syllabus for a course, even for each person, how long their course should be, how many modules it should have, what the title should be, who the students are, how to market and promote the course and put it out there and really get it off the ground. And this is my effort to support death education and to encourage people, because I know there are a lot of people out there, some who have teaching experience in various areas, who may never have taught about death and dying before, but are really interested in doing that. And your teaching experience can go a long way toward making you a perfect person to teach a class like this. And what I'd like to offer you through our work group is just the education about death and dying and how you, with more limited experience, could put a course together and feel confident in that you're offering valuable information. And then on the other hand, there are people who don't have teaching experience, but have lots of experience in the end-of-life arena, either taking care of dying patients or maybe working in a job or as a volunteer, and have a lot of experience and know they have a lot to share, and they just might be lacking some of the tools for creating the class and putting that together. So on both ends, I want us all to come together, share our expertise, and help each other create classes, and then go out and actually teach the classes and gather together again and come back and talk about lessons learned. How did it go? How did it work out for us? What would we do differently the next time? And really support one another along the way. I'm feeling like this is one of the best ways I can help really foster and support the death education movement from where I sit and what I have to offer. So kind of being being a bit of a guide, I guess, for and creating the hub where people can come together and support each other around death education. So if you are interested in joining that work group, if you've already downloaded the guidelines, you're on the mailing list and you'll get an invitation. If you haven't downloaded them yet, you can go to eoluniversity.com/guidelines, and there's a page there where you can sign up and get the guidelines. Also, if you just come to the show notes for this episode at eolupodcast.com, episode number 130, there will be a link there where you can sign up and get the guidelines. So either place, you should be able to find them, get your hands on the guidelines and your name on the mailing list, and you'll get an invitation to that work group. Like I said, initially, I'm only planning to accept 10 to 12 people for the group in March. If you don't make it, I have no idea how many are actually going to be interested in doing it, but if you don't make it in the March group, I will repeat it. I will be doing it again for additional groups. So there's a good chance that you can join a work group a little bit later, a month or so later this year. So don't get discouraged if for any reason you don't get in on time for this group. I also wanted to share with you something, some really positive news that I heard today from a person who's a listener of the podcast and the End of Life University interview series, who let me know that she had a conversation with her doctor about end of life issues. And the doctor was a little bit shocked and taken aback at first and didn't seem to want to go there. But she already had an advance directive completed, had already registered that with his office and shared it with him. And she wanted to talk about mechanical ventilation and resuscitation and CPR and those issues. And in the end, they had a really valuable discussion. And the conversation ended with him admitting that he hasn't filled out his own advance directives, but he realized he should. And so I was just totally thrilled and delighted to hear this, because one of the things I've been emphasizing is that, yes, we desperately want to change our medical system, and we need to, and we're working on the end of medical education, trying to educate medical students and residents about death and dying, and trying to help them become more aware and be better physicians for helping their patients make end-of-life decisions. But that is an action for the long haul. That's an action that's going to take years to start to make a difference before we can see it happening as these medical students finish their training and go through residency and get into practice. It's going to take some time before we actually see the outcome from all of those efforts. They're vital and crucially important efforts, so I don't want to in any way diminish that. But the other way in which we can have an impact that's a little bit more immediate right now is to empower consumers, to empower patients to do exactly what this woman did, to go to their doctors and say, talk to me about death and dying. Talk to me about the end of life. Talk to me about CPR and resuscitation at the end of life. What have you seen? What do you know about it? Because this is what I'm learning and this is what I want for myself. Really, I mean, you really have to be assertive to let your doctor know that it's important to you to discuss these issues and bring them up. You cannot wait for your doctor to bring it up with you because the average doctor won't do it. Either they don't feel confident enough to bring up the issues themselves. In particular, they fear offending a patient if they bring it up, or that they'll frighten a patient if they mention death and dying and end of life issues. So they are nervous about going there and initiating this kind of conversation. But as this person found, it worked for her to initiate it and to insist on it, insist on the conversation happening. And the doctor did participate, did give her useful information, and actually seemed to get into the conversation a little bit. So if we want to make some more immediate impact, the other end of things that we can all work on is empowering patient consumers to be the ones to initiate conversations with their doctors. And seriously, you will encourage your doctor to go out and learn more, because if the doctor thinks, wow, like every day somebody's asking me about end of life issues, I better learn something about it so I can talk about it. You're going to change your own doctor's awareness and your doctor's motivation to learn about death and dying simply by your behavior when you go to see the doctor. So this is why on this podcast, because I don't have very many doctors listening to the podcast. I have many more lay people who at one time or another are likely to be patients and go see doctors. It's why I'm encouraging all of you to be empowered patients who go ask these questions and become educators yourselves for your own physicians and your own medical team. And why I'm also encouraging death education, because each one of us who has this information, who believes in it strongly, who wants to change how we handle the end of life here in our society, we can make an impact if we use our knowledge to teach other people and create empowered consumers in our own communities. So by holding workshops and classes and discussion groups and film series and book clubs and getting people to read and learn for themselves, we will be empowering them to go to their own physicians, ask the right questions, demand the conversations that they need to have. And I think we can make a lot of headway. I think we can make a lot of changes in our medical system by starting at this end of things as well. And so, as I said, direct education of doctors at conferences in medical school during their training, that's essential. It must happen. It needs to happen as often as possible. But I want to emphasize this other end of things by motivating doctors to learn more and change their own behaviors by empowered patients coming to them and asking them questions. So all good. These are all my reasons and my motivation this year for really supporting death education. I do want to let you know before I go on a little further with the conversation today about death awareness and changing the world, with just one announcement to remind you that the podcast is sponsored by donations made through my page at patreon.com/EOLU. And Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon is it's kind of a crowdfunding site where people can support artistic endeavors that they benefit from. And, podcasts are part of that. Since podcasts are offered always for free, there's no charge. Anyone and everyone can listen, to a podcast and the information that's put out there. By signing up for Patreon and becoming a supporter of this podcast, you can make a monthly donation of as little as a dollar a month. And, the money goes to help me defray the costs of creating this podcast and putting it on the air, and also the End of Life University interview series. And you may not realize it, but I have to have equipment and software in order to just record and edit the episodes that I do and the interviews that I do. I have several different websites that have to be maintained and paid for on an ongoing basis. And I have other types of software that help me create emails and get signups from people and send out information about the interviews that I do, and also broadcast the interviews and store all of these recordings. So all of that adds up to a fairly significant expense that I pay out of my own pocket every month in order to do this. Now, this is a labor of love for me, and I am totally committed and devoted to it. But every dollar that gets donated helps me just to defray some of those expenses, makes it a little easier for me every month to keep going. But way beyond that, each time you step up and contribute just a little bit of money, the message I'm receiving is that you like what I'm offering here and what I'm putting out in the world, and that you're willing to help support it. And for me, emotionally and spiritually, that makes all the difference. So on weeks when I might be feeling a little tired or a little bit discouraged, or I'm sitting here wondering, does anyone even listen to any of these things that I do? I get reminders that come directly from you through Patreon to me that, yes, these people have signed up. They're offering their hard-earned money to help support what I'm doing. And in addition, you can send me emails. You can send me tweets and Facebook messages also to let me know that you appreciate the work I do. But if you're interested in offering just a little bit of financial support, you can go again to patreon.com/EOLU. And thank you so very much to everyone who's already a supporter. And oh, I will remind you, if you become a supporter, you do get some bonuses, like a monthly Q&A call where I answer your questions. I call it the Hospice Happy Hour. You also get exclusive access, if you're a platinum level supporter, to all the recordings, like for each year of the interviews that I do for End of Life University. You get all the replays available for you on the Patreon page, so you can go there and listen at any time to those replays. So thank you once again. Thanks for listening. I hope I don't come across as being hard sell or pushy or anything. I just want to let you know that there is an opportunity out there to show support if that appeals to you and that's something that you'd like to do. So thank you once again. Moving on, I want to share with you, I wrote a blog this week that got posted in Thrive Global Online, which is Arianna Huffington's new platform for information. And I'm one of the writers on Thrive Global. I used to be on Huffington Post when Arianna Huffington was there, but now she's moved to Thrive Global. So she moved a lot of the contributors to Thrive Global as well. So my little article got posted there this week called How Reading About Death Can Change Your Life. And the talk I'm doing today is how death awareness can change the world, but I wanted to tell you that I'll link to that post on Thrive Global in case you'd like to read the actual article that I wrote. But in this talk today here on the podcast, I just want to talk in general about the importance of death awareness and why I say it can change the world. And I'm going to tell you about some really interesting studies that have been done. To start with, what is death awareness? And in some of the scientific studies that are done, they actually refer to it as death salience, which means knowledge of death or information about death or literacy about death. And the reason that we've started emphasizing this point of being death aware is that for over 100 years now, our society has actually been somewhat oblivious to death ever since the rise of the funeral home movement and the rise of modern medicine, hospitals. Death and dying have been removed from the home where they used to take place because patients used to die at home and were taken care of by their doctors and their family members in the home. They also were laid out in the home for a wake and a funeral that took place at home, and that was during the 1800s. And then with gradually the rise of the modern funeral industry and the modern healthcare system, dying patients were removed from the home and taken to hospitals once there were hospitals available in all over the country in regions that were close enough that people could get there. Dying patients were taken to the hospital to die there and removed from the home. And at the same time, funeral parlors and the practice of embalming started increasing so that the dead were removed from the hospital once they died and taken directly to the funeral home to be embalmed and for a funeral to take place there. And so over a course of really as little as about 30 or 40 years, I read that by the end of World War I, literally everyone was dying in hospitals, no one was dying at home anymore, and funerals were taking place outside the home as well. So over a relatively short period of time, death no longer took place in the home. And therefore, people in their day-to-day lives did not necessarily experience death or witness it. And it's been almost 100 years now that we as a society have been without that really hands-on, tangible, down-to-earth experience of death and dying in our everyday lives. And the effect that has had on us is that we have become more and more death denying and death phobic as a society over time. So the less we see death, the less we know about it, the more it becomes something foreign to us and frightening to us. And so that situation has led to a lot of the issues we have right now of really having inadequate or inconsistent end-of-life care for many people, and many people not getting the type of care they would prefer at the end of life, because as a whole in our society, we have just chosen to shove death off in the corner and shove it into the hidden recesses of our awareness. So the death awareness movement that we're all part of right now, this podcast is part of, is just getting people to open up and awaken to the idea that they are mortal and they will die one day. For an individual, the deleterious effect of not thinking about death and not being aware of the fact in your day-to-day life that you're going to die one day is that you really begin to take life for granted. If you don't think and hold within your perception that your life could end at any time, if nothing's guaranteed, it's short and fleeting, you're much less likely to make sure you enjoy the moment that you're in. You're much less likely to focus on the things that matter the most in your life because you become complacent and begin to think that you have ample time, and it doesn't matter if you see your loved ones now, you'll do it some other day. It doesn't matter if you work on the project of your heart that's your greatest passion for life, you'll do it some other time. And you may tend to put off the things that are important to you and squander time on things that you don't really care about that much just because it's easier. And when we have death awareness and we remember at all times, I won't be here forever, my time is limited, my time is short, we're more likely to be motivated to spend time on the things that are really important to us, to make sure that we actually get those things done, that we can actually accomplish them while we're alive. That includes the extremely important thing of saying I love you to the people in our lives that matter to us. So for the individual, this is one reason why death awareness is important, and remembering each day that people die, that everyone we love and care about will one day die, and it could happen at any time. Death is mysterious in that way. We have no guarantees. We don't know how long we will be here or how long anyone will be here. So death awareness can change how each one of us lives our own lives. But what I wanted to tell you about is that some studies have been done. And first of all, Kenneth Vail and his colleagues from the University of Missouri spent some time looking at multiple studies that have been done in the last decade about death awareness, and have done some writing. They wrote kind of an review article that incorporated all the studies that they looked at and why they feel that death awareness is a positive thing. And at some points in the past, it's been thought to be actually pathological for us to think about dying or to have dying in our awareness. It was actually thought that it might be helpful if we do deny death, and if it's, you know, we won't be as frightened, we won't be as neurotic if death is removed from us. But in reality, these studies are showing the benefits of having death in our awareness at all times. And I just wanted to cover some of the studies because I found them to be really fascinating. So as I talk to you about these, I'm going to take a look at the article because I want to make sure I don't misspeak or misrepresent any of the studies that were presented. But the first study, this was rather fascinating. In the first study, they found that people just being physically near a cemetery were more likely to help out a stranger than people who were not near the cemetery. So they had the same type of stranger in distress who needed some, you know, some small amount of help. They found that people who were near a cemetery, had walked by the cemetery or had the cemetery in their awareness, were more likely to help someone that they had never met before. And the only factor that changed was their proximity to a cemetery. So it's fascinating to think that even a reminder, a subtle reminder of mortality, like seeing a cemetery, opened people a little bit to more awareness of the plight of another person who needed their help and made them more willing to reach out in help. And so I thought that was just fascinating. Isn't that incredible that we suddenly become somewhat more tuned in to other people and recognize their need for help when we are more aware of death and when it's more present in our environment? And so this same study, they wrote about also people. Let's see, awareness of death motivated more tolerance, more treating people with fairness and equality, more compassion, more empathy, and more pacifism. And so I thought that was really incredible. These were all field experiments that were done and observing people. So they saw more helping behaviors, more positive behaviors from people who became aware of their own mortality by the simple act of being near a cemetery. So that, I mean, think about how much reading a book about death and dying or taking a class on death and dying, how much farther that could go at helping people open up and begin to tune in and care about a stranger. So that was one group of studies that I found totally fascinating and interesting for all of those of us who like cemeteries. I know for some people it's a little frightening to be near a cemetery, but I have found that's one of the most enjoyable parts of my travel, especially when I go to Europe, to visit old cemeteries. And I spent a lot of time in Italy. You know, there are Etruscan tombs in Italy that you can see where the Etruscan society predated the Romans. So there are still tombs that are visible there of the Etruscans. And that was fascinating. And wherever I've gone over the last years as I've gotten interested in death awareness, I've been visiting cemeteries, even in tiny little communities that I drive through. I'm always fascinated. I'm fascinated to see the types of monuments that people place in their cemeteries, how the graves are cared for and situated. And even I find a sense of peace walking around cemeteries here in where I live in Colorado, up in the mountains. There's a ghost town that I camped near one summer, and there was a pioneer cemetery from the 1800s near this ghost town, and it's absolutely fascinating. Like the many of the graves just had wooden crosses that were handmade that over the graves, but there was a gravesite for two children of one family, the same family who had died about a year apart. They were each a year, 1 to 2 years of age at the time that they died. And, you know, you feel, I felt somehow connected to that family as I looked at the headstones and the grave sites of the two little children and thought about, wow, the impact on that family of losing two children 1 year apart. And if I remember correctly, both of them had died in the winter time, and up in the mountains, winter is severe. And I could imagine back in the 1800s, cold, cold weather, lots of pneumonia and influenza going around, children getting sick, and roads being closed due to snow, no way to get out and get to a doctor or to get any help or any care for their babies. So anyway, I'm just saying, in my own personal experience, you know, my sense of empathy and my sense of connection to that earlier time in history was heightened by visiting that cemetery and seeing those tiny little graves. So for myself, I have found it just a fascinating experience to visit cemeteries all over the world, and I highly recommend it. And even if you feel a little bit frightened about it, you might start with a cemetery in your area and just walk past it, or just go near it, or step inside. Oftentimes, they're really beautiful physical spaces to be in, and very peaceful, and filled with flowers and trees and grasses, and nice spaces for just a walk. So you might consider that if you want to become more death aware of, just make your own visit to a cemetery, and be aware of the fact that people near a cemetery tend to have to be more helpful towards strangers. I love it. I love that idea. How fabulous is that? We already have cemeteries in every community all over the world. And how wonderful is it if people simply become more acquainted with the cemetery in their area, and it opens them a little bit to be more connected with strangers. So that was one of the really exciting things I found through this research, but there's more. Another study, this was done back in 2010, and they found that increased death awareness motivated more sustainable behaviors toward the environment. And so I think this is fascinating too. It makes total sense when we become more aware of the fleeting nature of our own lives. You know, it opens us up to be aware of the cycle of life, of birth and death and life on our planet. And I can imagine that we begin to feel more respect and more care for the natural places around us, realizing that that life is also fragile, just as our human lives are fragile, and that we can do some things to help protect and preserve the life that's around us. So, interesting study. And think about it, this is a day, an age, a time in history when we really need more awareness of the environment and more sustainable behaviors to take place. And so So I just want to plant that idea in your head. Death awareness leads to more awareness of the fragility of our ecosystem, our natural environment as well, and not just awareness of it, but behaviors, changing of behaviors to behave in a more sustainable way toward the environment. So this is what's fascinating. Death awareness doesn't just change how we think and see the world. These studies are saying death awareness changes how we behave in the world, how we behave toward other people, and how we behave toward our own environment. And so just think about that. This is truly what education should be for, is to help us change the way we behave and the way we act in the world. And so, wow, what an impact you could have on your own community if you were a death ed teacher and open people's eyes, help them become more aware of death, and imagine the ripple effect and the kind of behavior change that could happen in your community as well as the people open up and become more comfortable with death. So moving on. Other studies showed that thinking about death promotes better health behaviors for the individual. And this seems kind of obvious that, you know, if you're aware of the fragility of your own health and your own life, you're less likely to smoke and more likely to exercise. But they've definitely validated it in studies and found that people who had more death awareness were willing to stop smoking, were willing to start exercise programs. Women started doing more frequent breast self-exams when they became more death aware. So their own behavior toward their own health and toward their own physical body changed as they became more aware of their own mortality. And again, like I said, it seems like, well, that would be obvious. Like, of course, when you think about the fact that you could die from doing unhealthy things, it makes you want to do healthy things. But here's the deal. There are so many public health programs out there, and programs in the healthcare system trying to motivate people toward healthier behaviors, trying to get people to stop smoking, start exercising, and care about their health. And many of those programs that are failing and not seeing positive results because they don't know how to motivate people to actually make lifestyle changes, to actually change their behavior. And these studies are showing that death awareness does motivate people to change their behaviors. So I'm saying keep up all the programs on smoking cessation and healthy behaviors, but add in death awareness, not as a way of frightening people about death, simply as a way of letting people know the cycle of life is fragile. Your body and your health is fragile, and one day you will die of something. You might hasten that if you don't take care of this physical body that you've been given temporarily as a gift. So I think when we combine death awareness with other types of education, we may find that we're more likely to motivate positive behavior change. And that's what all these studies are showing us over and over again. And so another study, and this I found very heartening and encouraging to me, and I hope I can explain it well. This study showed that when they worked with American and Iranian religious fundamentalists, so these were people that very strongly believed in their own religion, they had a strong identification with their religious group and were distrustful and rejecting of others outside of their religious group. So they had a strong preference for their religion, their belief system, and a very strong sense of the otherness of people who were not part of their group and part of their religion. So when they took these groups of very strong fundamentalists and added death awareness, taught them about death awareness, along with the teachings of compassion that were present in their own religions, since actually religions do teach compassion, whether we're aware of it or not, we may imagine that some religions don't emphasize compassion, but in fact, all of them do emphasize compassion for others and caring for others. So when these people who were fundamentalistic about their religion were taught death awareness and then were given scriptures from their own belief system that had to do with compassion, they were much less likely to be rejecting of others outside of their religion. And this is something that I've talked about a number of times, even in this podcast, is that the fact that we will die and that all of our loved ones will die and we will experience grief during our lifetime is the one thing that we share in common with every other human being on this planet. And so the one thing that can unite us, regardless of our differences, our racial, ethnic, cultural, societal, economic, religious differences, it's the fact that all of us are mortal. Every one of us will die. Every one of us has to face that reality in our lives. Every one of us has to deal with grief over the death of the people that we love and care about during our lifetimes. We have that in common. We share that burden and that pain with every other human on the planet. It transcends all other boundaries and all other differences between us. So when we can hold in our awareness that fact, that reality, I'm going to die and so is every other person, it opens us up to feel more compassion, more connection, more empathy with people who are different from us, but who have this very fundamental similarity to us. So, I have such a strong feeling, and I've always believed that that is the truth. But now there are studies that are showing this increased compassion and increased empathy, less likelihood of rejecting people who are different when those people with otherwise fairly rigid beliefs are made aware of mortality and death. So this actually gives me hope for our world. We live in a time right now when we feel deep divisions in our own society, deep divisions in our own communities, even in neighborhoods between people. And we're hearing stories about it all the time, how we have separated into them and us, and we're very polarized right now. And that's here in our society in the U.S., but the whole world is experiencing that kind of polarization as well. There's a lot of hatred and a lot of violence happening in communities because of that sense of separation and being different that we are clinging to and holding on to, and the rejection of others who are different from us. And so I believe so strongly that death awareness, death education, death literacy has the potential to overcome and transcend those boundaries and those differences between us. And again, there's a study that actually shows it happening and that actually documents that. So I feel great optimism from reading about these studies and excitement that those of us who care about the end of life and who are interested in reading and talking about death and dying, we're not just weirdos out there who have a morbid fixation with death. I think we're on to something here, and I think there are scientific studies that are showing us that this type of education, this type of exploration, this type of learning has a lot to do with how we grow and how we become better people, how we become our best selves and live our best lives. So I think we have lots of validation out there to go forward proudly and with confidence in the world. We know some vital information here about death and dying that everyone needs to know. And this is what I want to emphasize for each one of you out there. I want to empower you that because you're willing to learn about death and you're willing to face your own mortality and accept the fact that you'll die one day, you have positive knowledge that not everyone has. And you know things that people all over the world need to know and need to hear about. So I will say it again. I want to empower you to become an educator in your own way about death and dying, helping others around you to become more aware of death. And whether it means you stop at the grocery store and chat with your neighbor about the fact that her mother just died, or whether you go to your book club or your bridge club or your church group and say, hey, how about if we have a talk about end-of-life issues? Or whether you start your own class, or you create a university course, or start a workshop or a retreat in your community for people. You can do a lot to increase death awareness in your community, in our country, in the world. And I want you to feel empowered by that. So I want to tell you, I will keep providing you with information through this podcast and through the End of Life University interview series. I'll keep providing you with interviews and talks and discussions about information around the end of life so that you have a place to come to constantly update your education and learn new things and gather more and more and more tools that can help you as a teacher. But my biggest wish is that you will embrace that role as a teacher. Your interest in the end of life is the most important factor in becoming a teacher about the end of life and in helping others become more aware about death. So I'm encouraging you, keep listening to End of Life University, whether it's the podcast or the interview series or both, so you can stay up to date and keep educating yourself. If you think you want to start a class, download those teaching guidelines I mentioned, which could help you get started in the class. You could join our work group to actually get it done and put your class together. You could also join a year of reading dangerously and start reading some books about death and dying, which will also help you get more educated and might inspire you to create your own book group in your community. So, those are just some of my thoughts and ideas. I hope you enjoyed listening to those studies as much as I did. I'm excited and thrilled that we actually have some scientific information to back up these claims about death awareness, which I feel like I've been making for a while, but now there are actually studies out there that are validating it. So I hope you find that interesting. I'm so glad you tuned in today and joined me on the podcast. There'll be a new episode every Monday, so you can subscribe through iTunes if you'd like, and you'll get your podcast app on your smartphone will just automatically upload the new episode every Monday. You can also go to the show notes at eolupodcast.com and follow the new episodes there if you'd like. Always, I'll let you know, leaving reviews on ratings and reviews on iTunes is really, really helpful for the podcast because the more positive reviews a podcast has, the more likely iTunes is to recommend it to someone new who is looking for a podcast to listen to. So you can help this show get more listeners, but help more people find their way to this information if you leave a review, if you enjoy the content that I create here. And I'm assuming that you might enjoy it if you keep listening. So until next week when we're together again, I'll give you my usual reminder to face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings your way, and love your life. Love every moment of it. Until we're together again, take care and goodbye.